With Sean Manaea hurt, the New York Mets are now down two pitchers, but it isn't time to freak out just yet. Yes, welcome into First Pitch, your source for daily news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. My name is Troy Brock. I will be your host today. You can find me on Twitter at Troy B Baseball, and he is Lindsey Crosby. You can find him on the Twitter machine at Crosby Baseball, and we have got a packed show for you today. So make sure you hit that subscribe button, turn on that notification icon. We're trying to reach 500 subs pretty quick. We're almost there, and we appreciate each and every one of you that have already subscribed. So let's get to that 500 mark, but we've got a packed show, so let's jump on into it. Lindsey, Sean Manaea was shut down the other day from throwing, and he is now the second New York Mets starting pitcher that has been shut down. But like I said in the cold open, it might not be time to freak out just yet, because of all the options that are still available in free agency, there's really not many that are going to make much of a difference in their rotation. So what are your thoughts on this for the Mets?
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. It's like there's guys you could sign, but all that it does by adding in, let's say, Jose Quintana. I wrote that piece for Mets on SI. That's why I go to him. This is supposedly a short-term thing, right? Like, this is Manaea is going to miss a couple weeks. Frankie Montas will miss a month or so. And so if you sign a dude who's going to be in your rotation as a number five starter all year, all it does is take away starts from the other young guys that you need to figure out, right? Like, you've got Tyler Megill has been surprisingly good and a little bit underrated by a lot of people. Justin Hagenman was signed to be a spot starter. You've got some well-regarded prospects, Brandon Sproat, Blade Tidwell, Dom Hamill is still in there. Like, you've got dudes that you can give starts to. And if there's ever a time to give those young guys starts, you know, Griffin Koenig, who you signed in the offseason, and then he went to your pitching lab and did a lot of work. Paul Blackburn, who you got via trade last summer. If there's ever a time to give these guys starts to figure out who's ready and who's not, it's early in the year. You can do it now, and then by the time you have answers on if these dudes are okay or not, ready to contribute, you start getting guys back when you get back Manaea, and then you get back Montas. But if you sign somebody like Jose Quintana, you're locked into him every 5 days. If you trade for a bum like Marcus Stroman, you're locked into him every 5 days. And now you have less opportunity. Like, you're locking in a lower level of production, and you have less opportunity for one of those guys to flash. All of the good teams from the division recently, think about the Braves giving Spencer Schwellenbach an opportunity, and he was awesome. Think about Christopher Sanchez, ended up being one of the best starters in the National League. If either one of those teams goes out and signs a number five starter before last season to add to their rotation, they might not get that. They don't have the opportunity to give those guys the run.
Yeah, 100%. You're absolutely correct. And I specifically wrote about the Marcus Stroman point of it yesterday for Mets on
this
SI.
This is a Marcus Stroman podcast.
Very high on Marcus Stroman around here, but yeah, I wrote about that for Mets on SI because a lot of fans I've been seeing on Twitter, a lot of fans have been clamoring for the Mets to trade for Marcus Stroman, and then you've got high profile guys like Gary Sheffield Jr., who, you know, always makes good points and always knows what he's talking about when it comes to baseball, because, you know, his dad played, so that's why he's
popular. Obviously he's that's the only qualification you have to have. Yeah.
Right. And he was putting stuff out there like, Marcus Stroman will be better because the Mets infield defense is better than the Yankees infield defense. And a quick look at Baseball Reference indicates otherwise, because Marcus Stroman had a higher FIP with the Mets than he did in ERA when the Mets still had a better infield defense than the Yankees when Marcus Stroman was with the Mets. So it's just
trying to understand. Pete Alonso's all of a sudden good at defense at first base.
Right. And yeah,
Mark Vientos, the guy who they were talking about having to move to first because his defense wasn't that good, he's a better defender than Jazz. Really?
Yeah. Okay. And yeah, man, you didn't know that? It's don't look at their baseball savant. that might tell you otherwise. But no, yeah, the Mets infield defense is just as bad. They might have Francisco Lindor, who is a improvement over Anthony Volpe. If it might not be a drastic improvement, but it is an improvement over Anthony Volpe. But the only other guy in the Mets infield with a positive outs above average at their position is the projected starting second baseman Jeff McNeil. That's it. Pete Alonso and Mark Vientos are both awful defensively at the corners of the infield, and so it's just it would not be a good fit. And yeah, I wrote about that extensively yesterday. And another pitching thing that we saw yesterday was an old man facing a young man, and one of the craziest pitching matchups of spring training. Somebody that's almost as old as you, Charlie Morton, started.
He's older than me. Thank you very much. He's older than me. I'm 40. He's 41.
Charlie Morton started for the Baltimore Orioles. He was drafted by the Atlanta Braves on June 4th of 2002. On July 30th of 2002, just a month and a half later, the pitcher that opposed him for the Detroit Tigers, starter Jackson Jobe. So someone was drafted. Well, he was born. Yeah. So Charlie Morton was born before the pitcher. Charlie Morton was drafted before the pitcher he faced yesterday was born. And that is just a wild. Has there been another instance like this in recent memory? Because that's just crazy.
I'm about to say, I'm sure back in the day when guys got drafted and then made the majors almost right away and dudes played till they were 45, I'm sure that's happened in the past. But recently, unless it was some sort of like Jamie Moyer start, I can't think of a situation where that happened. Maybe Rich Hill last year, if Rich Hill faced Yuri Perez, maybe that's a scenario. Well, no, because Yuri missed the whole year because of the Tommy John. It may be a situation like that, but I can't imagine it happens that often. If nothing else, MLB put a tweet out about it, and they wouldn't have done that if that was a thing we see all the time. So that's just kind of hilarious to me. And it's like, yes, Baltimore, this is your savior. A 41-year-old man.
Yeah, we've talked about it all offseason. The Baltimore Orioles did not do enough. I think we both like the Charlie Morton signing, but we also both understand that adding just Charlie Morton to the rotation is not going to be enough for them to compete in the American League East. And
yeah, that was not enough. I like them signing in a vacuum, but not if that's all you're doing.
Right, exactly. And that's essentially all they did. And, you know, we've talked about that at length, and that horse is dead and we can stop beating it now. But it's the show of pitching, because the Washington Nationals also signed Kyle Finnegan to reunite with the reliever. They brought him back on a one-year deal, and it's a good fit for them. I think I'm a lot higher on the Nationals than a lot of other people. I think they're going to be a thorn in the side of the National League East, and I think that there's going to be a point late in the season where they're still in contention for a wild card spot and still competing with the New York Mets for that third spot in the division. But bringing Kyle Finnegan back is going to be a big help for that. And what do you think about this signing, Lindsay?
It makes sense. They obviously, they won, right? Because they had him, and they chose to non-tender him last year, final year of arbitration. The deal is for $6 million. I haven't yet pulled the arbitration projections for what he was expected to get, but I think he was projected to get more than that. I'm looking real quick. His projection was 8.6 via MLB Trade Rumors. So they non-tendered him and then brought him back for less. They totally won that deal. He was an all-star last year, first time in his career. He did struggle down the stretch, 2-4, 2.45 ERA early, 1-4 with a 5.79 ERA in the back half of the season. But I do think that adding Finnegan was a big deal for them simply because they didn't really have a set closer. They could have used Jorge Lopez in there a little bit. They could have tried to mix in Derek Law, but they did not have a starter. I'm sorry, not have a closer. So doing that gives them a closer again. And as I always say, there's no bad one-year deal to a veteran reliever, right? If they are not in it late, if they underperform based on what you think they're going to do, trade them at the deadline, get assets for them. He's going to be a free agent anyway. So this is nothing but a good deal for the Nationals. Sucks for Kyle Finnegan that nobody wanted him, and he had to like go back and take less money. But works out well for the Nationals, and you can see how they could be pesky with all of the young talent. Adding Nathaniel Lowe or Lau, whichever one it is, bringing in Paul DeJong and Ahmed Rosario. Like, you can see Michael Soroka has a rebound candidate in the fifth spot of the rotation. You can see how they could be feisty.
Yeah, it's a good lineup, and we'll dive deep into it in a couple weeks. We're saving the best division for last in our weekly division previews, but it's a solid lineup. I'm really high on the lineup, and they've done a lot with the bullpen this offseason, made a lot of additions there, but even before Kyle Finnegan, and like you said, adding Michael Soroka to the rotation, which is honestly probably a better rotation than most people realize. And so it's going to be a fun year to watch the Nationals, and they're going to be a thorn in the side of a lot of teams. But I do like them bringing Kyle Finnegan back. He was really one of the best relievers on the market this offseason, one of the highest touted relievers on the market. And it's crazy that he waited, that it took this long for him to land on a team. And that just seems to be kind of the going thing this offseason. All of the top of the reliever market took forever to land on a team. Carlos Estevez, it took a while for him to land on a team. And, you know, you've got guys like David Robertson, who is still a free agent, who we bring up pretty frequently, but he might not be a free agent much longer with Scott Efrost leaving his start yesterday with an injury for the Yankees. And
so, what a segue. Yeah. Last thought on Kyle Finnegan real quick. He got hit hard last year. Second percentile, 48.1%. I don't know why his fastball wasn't actually that great despite good velocity. So maybe that was something maybe it was bad luck. Maybe it's locations or whatever. But like, you can see why, but it still is weird. I feel like if you're not one of the best and you just like, and you think you can be a top half of the league closer, it's hard for you to find a job maybe right away. But yeah, like David Robertson, going back to New York makes a lot of sense at this point. One, he knows he works out with that team. There is back end work open, right? Like, they have Luke Weaver still. They swapped out Clay Holmes for Devin Williams, but there's going to be back end work. They can use him as a backup closer if they need to. And at this point, go with what you know over what you don't. You know that clubhouse. You know that team. They're the favorites to win that division again for some reason, somehow. I don't quite know how. But yeah, it's that situation. If you're not a top 10 or 12 closer when you hit free agency, maybe top 15, you end up in a situation where you have to take less money and or wait to sign compared to your equivalent at other positions, right? And it's just kind of, it's got to be frustrating for them, very frustrating for him. And at this point, he just needs to get into a camp, I feel like.
Yeah, for sure. He's coming off of a fantastic season, one of the best seasons of his career. He had a career high in innings pitched in 2024. Age 39 with the Texas Rangers. But yeah, he is very familiar with the Yankees and their clubhouse. So it's a perfect fit, especially if Scott Efrost is out for an extended period of time. And they need the help, because right now, like you said, their closer is Devin Williams, and he's not moving off the closer position. Then Luke Weaver and Ian Hamilton are currently projected as their setup men. But you got to think, if they bring in David Robertson, then he's going to bump Ian Hamilton back to a middle reliever role because of his experience, David Robertson's experience as a closer and as a setup man. And after that is Fernando Cruz, Tim Hill, Mark Leiter Jr., JT Brubaker, and then they have Marcus Stroman projected as a long reliever. But remember, he's a starter. He's not pitching out of the bullpen. So
right.
David Robertson's a good fit for the Yankees, and it's I've said it 100 times already this offseason, especially over the past month. I don't know why or how he is still a free agent, and he needs to get in a clubhouse because he's worth it. He's showed it last year. He's still good enough to be a Major League Baseball player, and It just doesn't make any sense to me. And another guy that's trying to prove that he's still good enough to be a Major League Baseball player is Justin Verlander of the San Francisco Giants, who we are talking about today in our previews of the teams and our next team in the National League West. I think we both have them finishing in fourth behind the Dodgers, Padres, and Diamondbacks.
We do. So,
but they really, while they did make some splashes kind of at the top of the market, they didn't really do too much this offseason to improve as a whole. They added Willy Adames to the lineup, who is a drastic improvement at shortstop over Tyler Fitzgerald, who was good offensively in a small sample size, but defensively he is not fit to be a shortstop by any stretch of the imagination.
And is a little nicked up this spring, if I remember reading right.
Is
like
he?
He's not, I think he's a little bit, like, he's not hurt or injured, but Tyler Fitzgerald is, I want to say, a little nicked up at the moment. Like, back injury, I think he's supposed to get cleared maybe, like, today or tomorrow and should be back soon. But he also admitted that, like, his ceiling at second base is higher than it's going to be at short. So he's down with playing second base on an everyday basis with Willy Adames at short.
Yeah, I missed that completely. So that's good on you there. But yeah, their lineup right now, you know, they still have Lamonte Wade Jr. at first base. There were options available for them on the market. They were tied to Pete Alonso at times in the offseason to bring him in at first base, but that never happened. But first base is a huge weakness. Just – that's probably the only weakness in the infield, however, except for offensively catcher Patrick Bailey. He's supposed to be really good defensively.
And he is the best defensive catcher in baseball. Yeah. So it's like, if you get anything out of him offensively, you're happy because he's making a difference defensively. He had an 81 WRC plus last year and he was 4.5 WAR.
Yeah.
Cause he's just so good behind the plate. Every respect.
Yeah, so really outside of Lamonte Wade Jr., their infield's good. Their outfield, not so much. They have Jung-Hoo Lee in center, Helio Ramos in left, who should be solid. He had a good year in 2024, but we'll see if he can continue that this year. And then, of course,
kind of a breakout there, yeah.
Yeah, and then Mike Yastrzemski looks like platooning with Luis Matos in right field. So how do you feel about this lineup, Lindsay?
I think there's a ceiling here on a lot of these guys that they haven't reached yet. Jung-Hoo Lee got hurt early last year. He only got like 150 plate appearances. He was still adjusting to the majors. Ramos did well offensively in his place, but struggled defensively. Moving him to a corner is good. Luis Matos, they moved him from the infield to the outfield because of, if I remember right, because of like defensive issues. Promise hasn't broken out yet. Is he, am I getting him mixed with somebody else? No. He's always been an outfielder. I'm sorry. But still, like, hasn't necessarily reached the promise that he's had. I mean, he hit much better in the minors than he's hit so far in the majors. He had a 2023 in AAA. He hit 353, right? But in the majors for his career, he's batting 235. So, like, there's a lot of promise here on a lot of these guys. Willy Adames. It's a tough ballpark to hit for power. Obviously, he's a power guy. These guys never do awesome in their first year with a new team, it feels like. So you can see the potential here, but it feels like they're maybe 1 year away. I do think you need an upgrade in that corner outfield spot that's between Yastrzemski and Matos. Yastrzemski's in the final year of his deal. You arguably need an upgrade at first base over Lamonte Wade. Bryce Eldridge is in the minors and could be up by the end of the year. Like, you can see how this can be a very good lineup. I just think they're a year away still. Wilmer Flores at DH is a little underwhelming to me. I think they're a year away, but you can see how they could be good. We're just not yet.
Yeah. There's definitely some pieces of that lineup who, like, if Tyler Fitzgerald could continue what he did in the small sample size, then that's going to be
speed and power. Like, kid's good.
Yeah. And if he could be any better at second base defensively than he was at shortstop,
he should.
Yeah. Well, then that's good for them. Then, of course, their bench of Sam Huff, Brett Wisely, Gerard Encarnacion, and then Luis Matos, who we spoke about. But getting to the rotation, their rotation of Logan Webb as the ace, Justin Verlander, Robbie Ray, Jordan Hicks, and Kyle Harrison. Of course, Justin Verlander stands out as the only addition to this unit. Logan Webb has been their ace for quite some time now. He is kind of one of the handful of guys. Yeah, one of the handful of guys in Major League Baseball who can legitimately be considered an ace because he consistently pitches well and pitches 200 or more innings every year. And there's not many guys that do that anymore. But this rotation, do you think it can stand up with other rotations within the National League West?
I worry about workload on some of these guys, right? Verlander and Ray combined for like 120 innings last year. Kyle Harrison as a rookie wasn't great. Jordan Hicks was doing that conversion to the rotation after a relief thing. His didn't go as well as Ronaldo Lopez's did, as we think Clay Holmes's could be this year. And then their lineup depth. I'm sorry, their spot, their rotation depth. Keaton Wynn had like an ulnar nerve transposition. He's not going to be available to make starts for them this year. They have a lot of dudes on the 40-man roster that are young, like Hayden Birdsong, Landon Rout, Mason Black, a lot of like rated prospects who have made, you know, a handful of starts at the major league level. And like the odds are one of them is going to work, right? Like one of them is going to hit. But at the end of the day, are they going to have three postseason caliber starters standing when the postseason gets here? I don't know. I feel like the lineup being a year away, all of the youth in their depth of the rotation, they're going to have to lean on these old men. They're going to have to lean on Verlander. Robbie Ray is, you know, 7 starts last year coming off of Tommy John. He's in his mid-30s. And I just worry that if Logan Webb goes down, this team's in trouble because there's nobody else you can count on for innings other than Logan Webb. And they have the depth, but is any of it good enough to get them to the postseason and then to do anything in the postseason? I kind of still think this is another team that's a year, like another rotation, just like the lineup. They're a year away because you got it. Harrison's got to figure it out at the major league level. He's one of the most exciting young lefties. He's got to figure it out. All of these prospects, somebody's going to be able to be effective, but who? We don't know. And that's promise, but too many questions for me to say this is the year for the Giants.
Yeah, 100%. And to your point on the workload, in 2024 of these 5 pitchers, the only one that qualified for the ERA title was Logan Webb at 204 and 2/3 innings. The next highest innings pitch total was Kyle Harrison at 124 and 1/3 innings. So yeah. It's they're going to have
to. If you're more than 5 starts away from qualifying for the ERA title, if you're more than like 6 or 7 starts away, which even Harrison was, it's hard to think you're going to be able to jump and get there this year.
Yeah. Oh, I 100% agree. And they're going to have to find ways to eat those innings. Even if Robbie Ray can somehow figure out how to stay healthy for an entire season, or Justin Verlander can take a step forward in his innings pitched and kind of go back
and still be effective. Yeah.
Right. And then they're going to have to find ways to piece together innings, and they can kind of do that with the bullpen that they have. But that's still kind of questionable. That currently Fangraphs projects Ryan Walker to serve as their closer, and then Tyler Rogers, the submarine pitcher, and Camilo Duvall as the setup men. Other than that, it's not much to speak of.
They really need Duvall to figure out how to be a closer again. He's got to be able to be better and be more effective. Ryan Walker is fine, right? He put up 10 saves last year. He also threw 80 innings. Like, wow. I mean, he's good. Don't get me wrong. He's good. But you've got to get Duvall to the point where he can take high leverage innings. He got optioned down last year. He was so bad. And Walker, Rogers, and the boys, really. I mean, Sam Jelly is physically imposing. He can give you long relief stuff. Lou Trevino hasn't been healthy in a couple of years. Tristan Beck is... didn't throw a lot of innings, looked pretty decent in the innings, but they got it. Somebody's got to step up. Duvall makes the most sense if he can figure out what went wrong, but somebody's got to step up to give them at least 3 guys they can trust. The thing you do like, though, to your point, so many of these dudes picked up a ton of innings last year. Rodriguez threw 52. Duvall had 59, and that's after being optioned down. Eric Miller had 67. Tyler Rogers threw 70. Sam Jelly threw 80. Like, tons of innings. But you've got to have the effectiveness of a third guy. Who's that third guy? And I don't know who it's going to be, but it needs to be Duvall for them to have a chance to make up for any sort of workload concerns in the rotation.
Right, 100%. And you know, it's kind of been an exciting time in San Francisco. All the fans and the team is excited about their new president of baseball operations, but in Buster Posey, and it does kind of seem like things will be changing in San Francisco. He handed out the largest contract in franchise history to Willie Adames. Beat his own record. Yep. And so it does seem like things will be changing, and they will be willing to spend more money, but they just didn't really do that this offseason. Willie Adames was good. Justin Verlander kind of feels like just a signing to bring in fans and sell more tickets at this point in his career. It
kind of felt like it was we wanted to get somebody better and they all got signed and we just grabbed somebody that was left. We grabbed a name that was left, hoping he can figure it out and find a fountain of youth. And to your point, maybe we can sell some tickets.
Right, exactly. So maybe they'll do more in the coming offseason, next offseason. You know, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is out there and they need a first baseman. Who knows? But real quick, before we give our final thoughts on the Giants, I did want to kind of read off some of their win-loss totals from the last few years. So I'm going to start with 2017. This is going to be a lot, but I think it's pertinent information here. 2017, 64-98. 2018, 73-89. 2019, 77-85. 2020, 29-31. 2021, 107-55. 2022, 81-81. 2023, 79-83. 2024, 80-82. So a couple of things here to take away from this. One, I think it's safe to say that 2021 was a pretty drastic outlier of
the fluke. Yeah. Everything went right, obviously.
Everything went right. They did lose in the National League Division Series three games to two. They lost in five. What do you think?
Was it the Dodgers?
Their
division rival?
Yes.
Okay. Because then the Dodgers lost the NLCS to the Braves, and the Braves won the World Series. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, did the Braves win the World Series that year?
2021. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, it's okay. Your Phillies won it the next year, right?
Oh, no, wait. They didn't. They sure they didn't, pal.
That's right. They did. I'm sorry. My bad. Sorry about that.
What do you think? So they went 80-82 last year.
Yeah.
Do you think that they will improve this year, get worse, or stay the same?
I'm going to define staying the same as being within two games of 500, right? Yeah, it's not exact record, but I think roughly stay the same. Arizona's a good team. Arizona's a better team than we give them credit for. The Padres lost some pieces, but still have a very good lineup. Like, their divisional matchups, the Dodgers obviously are the freaking Dodgers. The divisional matchups are going to be tough. And if I remember right, like, I don't even think they did that hot against Colorado. I have them roughly the same, right? They might fluctuate a couple wins, but I still have them kind of hovering around 500. I still think they're a year away, an upgrade at first base, an upgrade in right field, away from being potentially contending for wild card favorites, but being a legitimate contender for a wild card spot versus just a everything has to go right contender for a wild card spot.
Right. To your point, I will say they did do well against the Rockies. They went 10-3 against the Rockies last year.
Okay, I got that wrong. Sorry about that.
No worries. Otherwise, other than that, they totaled 16 wins between the other three teams combined.
Ooh, see?
So, yeah.
I knew there was some sort of issues with the division. I just thought it was the Rockies, not everybody else.
Right. So, but yeah, I agree with you. I think they're going to kind of be the same. They did bring in Willie Adames, so their offense is going to be a little bit better, as well as their defense. It's short is going to be better, but I think they're going to be marginally the same. I don't think they're going to really do much more. And we both have them finishing in fourth this year. And it's going to be another long season for San Francisco, but you got to trust the process with Buster Posey. But this has been First Pitch, your daily source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. Make sure you go to firstpitch.com to find the podcast and go to YouTube, hit that subscribe button, turn on that notification icon, and we will see you tomorrow with another episode of First Pitch.